to Life show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly, and as well as being the regular host for this show, I'm the founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity that's been promoting integrative oncology for more than 15 years, an approach to cancer care that sets out to meet the multiple needs of people with cancer in body, in mind, and in spirit. It's always inspiring to speak to an oncologist who's on the same page in terms of interest in integration, and one such oncologist is Dr. Wafe Abdul Hadi from Egypt, who I've had the pleasure to have as my guest on the show before. I'm speaking to Dr. Abdul Hadi over the internet in Egypt. Hi Wafe, really pleased to have you back on the show again.
Thank you, Robin. Always a pleasure.
So last time you were on, we spoke about the role of inflammation in cancer and strategies for controlling it. Today, you indicated you'd like to talk about the fundamentals of healing. So firstly, what exactly do you mean by this?
Well, I want to tweak it a little bit. So healing in general has almost the same fundamentals. You know, when you look after what you eat, your lifestyle modification, your vitamin levels, nutritional deficiencies, sleep, and you tweak all of these things. However, I want to tweak it to say that when it comes to cancer, you have to know these fundamentals because those are the first steps in your recovery road. So whether that person is on treatment, a conventional treatment for cancer, finished conventional treatment, or even has a predisposing genetic predisposition to cancer, like it runs in the family, they have to go through those fundamentals and learn them by heart because those are the best defense against cancer.
Okay, fair enough. So, but nonetheless, of course, when people get cancer, this is not the first thing they're thinking about generally, is it?
It should be integrated hand in hand with the conventional treatment, because that actually improves the outcome of the conventional treatment and they have a lesser side effects using those modalities.
Well, absolutely. But that's yet to happen in this country. So hence we have to have shows like this one to encourage people to pay attention to this stuff. But it's not surprising that really when people get faced with a threat like cancer, the first thing they're looking out for, well, what's the thing that's going to save my life? They're looking for a treatment that's going to save their life. So I think you're not saying, well, that's not important, but you're saying actually this is also important. Am I right?
Of course. Listen, so when someone has a cancer diagnosis, if it's stage one or stage two, I just want to tell them you have time to get a first, second, and third opinion. And you have to pause for a moment and look for, why did I get this cancer? What are the best options of treatment? And how can I optimize my body in order to take in those treatments and recover from the side effects earlier, and not to have long-term side effects and prevent recurrence? This is what they should be thinking about. So if someone comes first stage, for instance, which is the most common breast cancer, for instance, and their doctor told them, well, you got to have mastectomy. You have to remove your breast, your lymph nodes, etc. Well, this is a devastating news for the lady to hear.
Yeah.
However, sometimes, in some cases, it's crucial when that breast has multifocal disease, like the disease is not in one area in the breast. When the breast is very small and she should, if she removed the lump, then the rest of the breast left will be deformed. So it's a patient, clinician decision, and actually it's the decision of a patient. For instance, I have two or three patients, they don't want to do a mastectomy. So I told them, listen, I don't promise you anything. However, they didn't even go to their oncologist. However, let's do this 1, 2, 3, 4, but you have to do it very strictly. Don't be bored. You have to be compliant. And thank God in 3 to 4 months, they had reduction in their breast mass. But I told them we will still go for a lumpectomy instead of a mastectomy. Why is that? Because you always crave ice cream, you always crave bad habits, and I'm not sure that they will maintain on those good habits. We are not like, we're not angels, we're humans, we make mistakes.
Right.
And the cancer is just waiting for any mistake that you will be doing, then it can like take over the body.
Right.
So it's just like when they get first stage, they have to understand, like, should I be going with a very brutal surgery? Should I take a step back and optimize my body before going for surgery or chemotherapy? Or is it too late for that and I should go with both of them at the same time?
Yeah, these are important discussions, aren't they? Because that kind of older approach of kind of hitting it with the most aggressive stuff straight away first, well, we're not really thinking quite like that anymore, are we? I think things have changed.
I hope so. I hope so, Robin. Yani, I have to tell you that I have a very nice lady here in Egypt, and the cancer keeps coming back. And I told her, listen, they have been like, they are hitting her with very hard chemotherapy, and she can't have the resources. Like I told you, we don't get to get intravenous treatment. We have like difficulties getting the supplements here in Egypt. So she's not like consistent with the lifestyle modifications and the fundamentals that I'm telling you about.
Right. Okay,
however, whenever she gets a recurrence, they just hit her with the hardest they can give her. And this actually worsens the terrain or the microenvironment of your body. How can you, if you have a building, how can you build another floor when the lower floor have been bombarded or hit by several bombs?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have like a good structure, a good base, so that you can build upon.
Absolutely. It's also interesting that a lot of people, some people are talking about the notion that actually lower dose treatment in some ways can be more effective because of the if you push cancer too hard, it forces it to mutate, and therefore you have a more aggressive, more difficult situation to deal with. But if you keep the treatment at a lower level, you can actually keep it down without forcing it into a situation where it has to mutate.
I am very convinced that this is the way to go, whilst doing the fundamentals, because if you're doing low dose and not doing anything and you're eating sugar and you're having night shifts and you're not sleeping properly, you know, all of these things that we're going to discuss, then the cancer will definitely come back. However, when you do like a low dose, it's called metronomic chemotherapy, or something that your body can withstand with something like a fasting mimicking diet or a ketogenic diet. It depends on the nutrigenomics of that patient and his blood test, because I don't prescribe ketogenic diet to everyone.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
No.
It's individualized.
Right.
However, like, I would rather have the patient do that, because very interestingly, I was listening to this research a few days ago, and they were talking about anti-angiogenic therapy, which is the immunotherapy that stops the tumors from making more blood vessels. They said that initially it stops the tumor, but if you use it even more, it will actually promote the cancer to find other alternative pathways to become more aggressive.
Right.
That's why we can stop like new vessel formation with a lot of natural supplements, and we can stop metastasis with a lot of natural supplements that don't have side effects, and the body and the cancer will be tricked, because
right.
this is like a normal component that the body should be actually eating.
Interesting. Okay, well, all of that was a red herring, because we're not talking about mainstream cancer treatments and everything, but really interesting. Thank you. So we want to now move our attention to all these things that are the fundamentals that you're talking about. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so this is what's sometimes called the terrain. And this is the health and the well-being of the body in which cancer arose in the first place. So here we're kind of into those soil and seed metaphors, and the question of which is the more important to the development and therefore the treatment of chronic diseases like cancer. And that sort of soil and seed thing has swung backwards and forwards between emphasizing the soil or the seed literally for centuries. Do you feel that one deserves more attention than the other?
Well, I think that there should be a balance between both.
Hmm.
because you can't have one better than another. If you have good soil than bad seeds, it's the same thing as having bad soil and good seed. So a good seed cannot thrive in a bad soil and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm asking people and what I'm trying to actually get them to be aware about the situation is that there are fundamentals in our lives that we should have been doing years and ages ago. However, they have been changed with the food industry and our modern life. So we're actually going back to the basics. For instance, like food is information. When you talk, for instance, like about the mitochondria and how mitochondria is very important, the mitochondrial health for the development of cancer, because it's the battery, and cancer is like a metabolic disease rather than a genetic one. So mitochondria is your main thing to concentrate on. So you have, so if we consider mitochondria as a seed in a bad soil, it will not function properly. It will not give you the right energy, etc. However, if the mitochondria, you give her the good soil and the good nutrients in order to be a stronger mitochondria, not a weak one. So something like colorful vegetables, cruciferous vegetables, green tea, and CoQ10, the carrots, the vitamin E, C, selenium, all of these things, those are crucial. And when I think about what I ate yesterday, it doesn't contain all of those things. Like you have to have like a special cook to cook those recipes for you. So those are the fundamentals, using the spices properly. As we talked last time about turmeric and how the curcuminoid blocks 90 pathways for cancer development, not one. So mitochondria is one of the main things. And we have to see what is bugging so what has triggered that cancer development. So they have like a weak mitochondria. What about infections? Do they have an underlying infection? Do they have Epstein-Barr virus that we can see in lymphomas and many other diseases and head and neck cancer? Do they have Helicobacter pylori? Do they have CMV? Do we have human papilloma virus, HCV, etc.? Do they have bacterial infections? There are certain bacterial infections and parasitic infestations that actually can lead to cancer. And we try to eliminate those in a natural way or combine with antibiotics and anti-parasitic medicines. I'm very pro to that. And then, do they have? Are they eating properly, or are they adding more toxins? And if that person is having more, if two people are eating the same way, why is that person having more toxic load than the other? It depends on their genetic predisposition and how and their ability to detox those toxins from their body. So all of these things, like if the mitochondria is the seed, we have to optimize the soil so that it can live happily and thrive and give you what you need from energy. And but we have to give the right nutrients. So it's all about the soil and the seed, like you said, but we have to optimize according to each patient. Mm-hmm. Look at the food, your lifestyle, are you sleeping properly? And we have a lot of papers about sleep deprivation and cancer. Stress and cancer, and how stress can actually inactivate tumor suppressor genes like BRCA gene, and how stress reactivates Epstein-Barr virus, and how stress deactivates the immune system, and then mentally and spiritually. There are nowadays, I'm learning new things about biomagnetic therapy and the field therapy, and how you can actually heal the body with frequency. And you will laugh from a conventional doctor like me believing in these stuff, but they are actually true. And I have actually tried them on myself and my loved ones. Right. So we are in an era that if we use the fundamentals to recover from any disease, especially cancer, I think we will reach that recovery.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting. I mean, obviously, conventional medicine has been bedazzled by the seed for decades. You know, they've just been busy firing things at it and pouring chemicals on it. And considering that the evidence to show that actually the environment is incredibly important has been around for, I don't know, 40 or 50 years now. You know, Mina Bissell was doing her incredible experiments in California, where she's showing that if you put a cancerous nucleus into a healthy environment, the cytoplasm that's healthy, it'll actually behave itself and revert. And inversely, if you put a healthy nucleus into a cancerous cytoplasm, that turns into cancer. So, you know, that should have made people wake up, really, a long time ago. I think that was done in the 1980s. Experiments, weren't they? I think they were a very long time ago anyway. And but they seem to have no impact whatsoever on this sort of roller coaster of, right, all we're going to do is try and eliminate the cancer cells. And so you're actually saying that both things are important, and they're both equally important, really, probably. I don't know. But I mean, one of the things I've noticed over the years is that if you've got a fairly indolent cancer, one that's not too aggressive, then the chances are you can keep that at bay with lifestyle interventions alone.
Yes.
But if you've got a cancer that's got a momentum of its own, you know, it's running away, you've got a disease which is, going to have horrible results fairly soon if you don't do something about it. It seems like this momentum is something you have to slow up. And you can't do that with lifestyle. You've got to have something more aggressive to do that, in fact. In order to give yourself a chance for the lifestyle stuff to do its work, you've got to give yourself some room. And these seem to be the two places where these two types of medicine operate. The conventional medicine is good in a crisis, basically. But the lifestyle medicine, interestingly enough, is good where it's a fairly indolent one, but it's also important when it's a crisis as well. So, and that's the one that's being ignored generally by conventional medicine. So anyway, your comments, please.
Now, I couldn't have said it better, actually, Robin. This is fantastic. And when you were talking at the seeds, the scientists are looking at the wrong seeds. You know, so when you have like a, if that patient is in a crisis, that's when I come in place. I have a lot of thankfully, I have a lot of people who trust me, and they come for my medical expert from the conventional and the integrative point of view, because I tell them, like, can I take this immunotherapy now? So I told them no, because of this, that, but you can take that immunotherapy instead. Why don't you send those papers to your oncologist and have him contact me if you wish? So like, I had a patient, metastatic colorectal cancer patient. He was refusing for years to take chemotherapy. And at the end, I told him, I beg you, please take the chemo under my responsibility. And actually, I did a pact with that oncologist, and we did a low-dose metronomic chemotherapy alongside intravenous vitamin C and mistletoe, and the results were extremely amazing. Wow. Because he was doing the fundamentals alongside.
Right. And out of interest, were you also working with genetic information to prescribe that protocol?
Absolutely. This is of utmost importance. Yeah. Because so there are two types of genetic information. When I was a conventional oncologist, I would get the genetic information from the biopsy or from the cancer taken out, mm-hmm. and I see which genes are have been mutated and the pathways, etc. Unfortunately, the laboratory companies who make those genes, the sequencing of those genes, they only test for the ones who have an immunotherapy or a drug down the pipeline. So I don't get the full picture.
Right.
And there are other set of genes that is the blueprint of your body, where you can see how you can detoxify the chemotherapeutic agents that you're doing. There are, for instance, some of the genetics that if you don't have, you shouldn't be having a certain chemotherapy because your body will not be able to metabolize it.
Right.
And that's what differentiates someone having severe toxicity from a chemotherapy and someone with the same diagnosis taking the same chemotherapy and didn't get that severe side effect from that drug. And then comes, of course, the genetic expression, how to use nutraceuticals, lifestyle modification, and food to impact the genetic expression of those genes that we have found. It's extremely important, and I found it extremely handy, except instead of me guessing, like, oh, so I guess he has this, and I guess he has that. But
yeah.
If we have the information in our hands, that will be quite a breakthrough in that patient's life.
Yeah, I mean, I ask that because it seems to me this is another kind of blind spot in conventional medicine, is that this information is now available, just as easily available as the information about the tumour is, but it's not being looked at all. And so, yeah, yet again, people are getting a conveyor belt medicine, you know, one size fits all, when one size definitely doesn't fit all. As soon as you've looked at the genetic information, it's absolutely obvious that some things are right for some people and they're completely wrong for somebody else. So I don't know how we're going to make that change. I mean, it seems like it's, in some cases, it's a life or death decision. It's that important.
Yeah. But that's why I try to educate my patients the importance, because sometimes these, if the NHS or if you're in any other company and your doctor did not order those tests, sometimes they can become very expensive. Like the blueprint, the nutrition, the genetics, nutrition genome, like the detoxification genes or whichever company that you are using, it's like $300, $400. But the ones that are made on the tumor sequencing, they are quite expensive.
Hi.
And I remember one of those patients who came to me, and he had lung cancer resistant to any chemotherapy. And I told him, let's get a fresh biopsy and do this molecular intelligence testing to see what's going on, why your lung cancer is not responding to any chemotherapy. And actually, believe it or not, he was resistant to all the chemotherapeutics in the guidelines to lung cancer. And the ones that he should have been taking were the chemotherapy to colon cancer, right, despite his pathology. So it's extremely important to know how this cancer is actually behaving, what would be more impactful than other, looking at the patient's kidney functions, liver functions, and most importantly, his mental and spiritual well-being. How is he taking this? The shock, the grief, the fear. Because I think that it's even more important than the treatment itself, the mental state of that patient. Because if his mental state is not balanced, he will not be able to take anything, like make any fundamentals, and he will just be taking the chemotherapy or radiotherapy like this is the pre-death sentence, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to take this and I'm not going to get better. So why am I doing this? And then he goes into like this gloomy area that you can't get him out of it.
I agree.
So there should be like a support for the patient and support for the family. So how can the family support this person? Because at the end of the day, it turns out that the cancer patient is the one who is stronger than the family. And he's telling them, please don't cry. And they should be the one actually giving him the support, not the other way around.
It happens. You're right. But I certainly would agree with you about putting the mental and spiritual state of the patient as top of the list, most important thing.
I think you do this with your new support group, don't you?
We do. We've got, and we're getting more things, actually. We're just dreaming up a new scheme to provide more support in that way. So, yeah, very important.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, this whole business with the understanding of the genetics, I see in a certain way it turns the whole of the sort of evidence base on its head when you start to treat somebody with lung cancer with a chemotherapy which has passed all the millions of pounds worth of trials to treat colon cancer. And, what was that trial for? Well, there's no use at all, actually. But this piece of genetic information is far more useful on a single person basis, and the population study of, you know, thousands of people was actually a waste of money, funnily enough. Gold standard trial, you know, this is what we're all supposed to believe and bow down to, but actually showing that when you have a particular patient in front of you, it doesn't give you the right answer.
Yes, absolutely. It's every patient, I tell him, listen, you are my project. Every patient is a project.
Right.
And either we succeed together or we fail. It depends on your work and my work with you. Right. So we're a team. So it's a project. Like, even our health, it doesn't have to be cancer. If someone has an autoimmune disease, if someone has like back pain from a previous injury, it's a project with the rehabilitation and making him fit and not in pain anymore. This is the miracle of the human body. That's why I love medicine, because you just have to be patient and address everything that's in balance to put it back in balance again.
Okay, so now can we look in a bit more detail at the measures that do support the health of ourselves, our terrain? What do you think are the most important ones?
Most important ones are the food that you eat, because it's like if you are driving a car and you're not giving it the right fuel, how will it work? So the food is extremely important, the quality of the food, the variation of the rainbow color, the amount, like there is, I think I told you last time about the 1973 paper about taking one spoon of sugar paralyzes your neutrophils, like the white blood cells, for 5 hours.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, so stay away from sugar at all costs. And implement, like, avoid the inflammatory foods in general. We all know inflammatory foods. I don't have to educate you about it, like the sugar, like the gluten. Gluten was extremely beneficial back in the old days. But with the manufacturing process and the glyphosate and the genetic modification, it had made it actually, Dr. Datis Kharazian always says, like, whenever someone has an autoimmune disease, just take off the gluten and the liquid dairy. That's it. And then try to improve his microenvironment, the terrain, the inflammation, and balance it. So it's all about removing the main three things, sugar, gluten, and liquid dairy. Why am I saying liquid dairy? Because sometimes cheese is extremely important. It depends on the genetics, the blueprint of that patient. Because you need good quality cheese to give good energy in a ketogenic diet or a modified ketogenic diet, etc. And then you have to learn how to eat mindfully. So don't eat in a haste. Chew your food properly so that you don't be overburdening your digestive tract with the chunks and lumps of food for it to digest. Because when people are stressed, we don't have enough enzymes to digest the food for us. So we're just like overloading our body with extra unnecessary work that we should make it easier for it. And then we should do the intermittent fasting and the fasting mimicking diet. There have been hundreds and thousands of papers on its importance in autoimmune diseases, a lot in cancer, polycystic ovaries, and obesity, and heart diseases as well. So if someone, I don't want you to do like, we do like a very long fast, but I just want twice per week, make it 13 hours and then work to 16 hours of fasting. So just stop eating at 7 p.m. and eat at 10 in the morning instead, twice per week and three times per month. Especially in the lunar phase, because in the lunar phase, there are hormonal changes and the parasites like get flushed out from your system. And that's the best time when you can just take some mimosa pudica or neem to get those parasites out of your body. Mm-hmm. And then the hydration is extremely important. So don't stick your head into the laptop like I do and drink like 1,000 cup of coffee per day. Just put a big 2 liters of water beside you with a squeeze of lemon, just to alkalinize the body, because the cancer is hypoxic, it likes to be, like when there is lack of oxygen and high acidity, the cancer grows bigger. That's why the importance of eating like green leafy vegetables, alkalinizing the body, and exercise is of utmost importance. Not only that you are oxygenating your body, but you're actually providing anti-inflammatory cytokines. So you are promoting the anti-inflammatory effect of the body. I have a patient I had a patient back in 2003, actually, and he would come to take his chemotherapeutic session with his gym clothes. And I tell him, his nickname was Zizu. So I tell him, Zizu, where are you going? And he says, I'm going to the gym. So I told him, you just took a very hard chemotherapy. He said, but if I didn't go to the gym today, after the session, I will be knocked out in bed for 7 days. So this is like the chemo, the and the oxygenation actually prevents and improves the chemo brain that you hear about. So, but of course, it depends on each stage. And then we look at the infections. So if we can do something like the stool analysis tests that look at the microbiota and the microbiome, the balances in it, and if that person has any parasites, bacteria, or overgrowth, we should try to eliminate them. And then the endocrine, so the thyroid gland should be in range, the sleep, the melatonin, we should, and if that person doesn't sleep well, we should actually give him melatonin, not to sleep, but to mimic the circadian rhythm until he gets his affairs in plan. And then we have the to stay away from the xenobiotics, which are hormone disruptors. So one of the lectures that I've been giving is that the xenobiotics that can actually come from plastics and BPA plastics, even more, BPA-free plastics, they don't just mimic, or they don't just mimic the estrogen and stimulate the estrogen and progesterone growth, but they actually affect the thyroid receptor, the androgen receptor for men, the retinal receptor in the eye, and glucocorticoids. So it doesn't affect just the, so stay away from plastics because of the female cancers. No, it affects all of the receptors in the body, and the increase in those xenobiotics, the scientists have found that the body created something called a xenobiotic receptor.
Really?
Just to, yes, it's called an orphan receptor.
Wow.
Just to accommodate all the xenobiotics that are in the bloodstream. So it's, and the stress and the psychology, because there have been many, many studies about yoga and meditation for 3 months, increase the brain-derived neurotrophic factor for your brain, alter the inflammatory markers, and actually increase something called the cortisone awakening response. Because when someone has like low cortisol in the morning, he will be like very sluggish waking up, doesn't get this awakening moment except in the afternoon. So a lot of things have to be modulated. And of course, the mitochondria, the battery of your human, of the human body, and how to regain the metabolic flexibility of that person. I don't know if I missed something or...
There's plenty there for people to be getting on with, that's for sure. Can I nip back to the plastics for a minute? Because you mentioned there in passing, you, I think you said that the so-called BPA-free plastics are worse. Is that what you said?
Yes, they have made a clinical study measuring the endocrine, like the estrogen mimicking molecules in the BPA, compared it with the BPA-free plastic bottles, and they found out that the plastics BPA-free are even worse than the BPA ones. Right. I generally recommend glass or stainless steel bottles to drink from.
Right. Well, yeah, sure.
And the filter water, you have to emphasize having a filter in the house. It's extremely important.
Yeah. Well, that's a bit of a shocker to hear. I'm sure some people are gaining some confidence from the fact that if they were using some plastic, at least it was BPA free. But that sounds like it was misplaced confidence.
Nope. Because they do the like their invention, like, oh, we have the BPA-free, and they put another molecule that's even worse. And you know, of course, from Dr. Robert Rowntree and many other functional medicine doctors talking about the ink in the receipts. So now when I, the receipts from the supermarket, so now when I get the receipt, I just take it from the with the top tip of my hand and just put it in my purse.
Right. Yeah. All right. So something you've said a little bit about along the way, which is another aspect of this that's worth exploring a bit, I think, is the negatives of conventional anti-cancer therapies. The use of any of these does, of course, involve damage to the terrain in some way. So this is an important fact that deserves more attention than it currently gets, I'd say. Do you want to say a bit more about that?
It's just unfortunately when if a clever patient finds me or finds one of the other integrative oncologists and we prescribe like a special protocol for them to thrive what they're going through the chemotherapy, Unfortunately, their oncologist denies this, and they tell them, oh, don't take vitamin C, don't take curcumin, don't take EGCG, don't. Just wait until the chemotherapy is over with. However, I give them data about, for instance, the synchronization between, for instance, curcumin and gemcitabine in colorectal cancer, that it actually improves the cytotoxic effect of the chemotherapy while preventing the damage on normal cells. Like whenever someone is having radiotherapy, you should get like the, for instance, shark liver oil or high doses of omega-3 fatty acid, curcumin as well, if they can get mistletoe. So there are a lot of things that should actually be implemented during the conventional treatment so that person wouldn't be having the damage from that. There are certain mushroom extracts that are used as creams for people taking the capsaicin, the Zeloda tablets, that actually prevents them from having those horrendous hand and foot syndromes. And they apply it on the breast before the radiation in any part of the body. So why can't the oncologist, the conventional one, integrate with a naturopath or with an integrative oncologist colleague? Like, he should listen from me. I've been there. I'm an oncologist, a conventional oncologist as well. Yeah. However, they have their protocols and they don't want to mess with the statistics. You know, like we have this patient, he will take this protocol. We don't want anything to meddle with it so we can have the statistics. So we need to change the paradigm, make a paradigm shift of how we practice medicine and look at the patient not as a cancer dying patient or a statistics, but as a human being.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, this thinking that's been got into, which in this country, Lord Saatchi, whose wife died a horrible death she had ovarian cancer, I think. He described the treatment protocol as endlessly repeating a failed experiment, which was extremely accurate because it doesn't work very well, but it's the gold standard, so we just do it. And nobody is looking to improve it. You know, there's literally no effort being made by the clinicians, who are incredibly experienced, knowledgeable people who've come into contact with thousands of patients with the same disease. They're the best placed to be able to make little changes that will improve it and improve and improve it. And with lots of clinicians all doing that together, we could go a long way. But we're just completely bypassing that and just doing what it says on the computer. I agree, it's just statistics and numbers.
Why would someone like me, a conventional oncologist, shift her career to be an integrative functional medicine doctor? Huh? Because I have seen it, I have tasted it, I know that it works. So I have seen it. I've been practicing conventional oncology for more than 15 years, and I've seen it failing over and over again. And I just want to offer people the best and the best chance with a good quality of life.
Well, it's obviously great when patients are able to go along with your recommendation to their own oncologist and say, look, this oncologist here suggests that you do this. It's much better than just turning up with a book, you know, and saying, I read this. So they're lucky they got the backing of you, but I guess even that doesn't always work.
No, not always. And but it's not just me. We are thousands of people doing the same thing. And I'm lucky, of course, that I'm here with you to spread the news about the collaboration between conventional and integrated functional medicine oncology. But it's just that they need to not to listen to books, because not all books are true. Like, no. For instance, like the best book that I recommend for my patients, and you know, of course, I love the metabolic approach to cancer by Nisha, because it's very clear to the non-medical with backed up data at the end. Nice. So she's telling it like in a very nice way. I wish I had this book years ago. And there is also like the Keto for Cancer for Miriam Kalaman, and there are a lot of Outsmarting Your Cancer, and there are a lot of very good books. However, do not use atorvastatin and all repurposed drugs in all patients, because it doesn't work that way. No. So one of the fundamentals for the cancer recovery is not to use repurposed drugs unless it's indicated in your case by a medical professional. Because it it actually, it's a nightmare for the terrain and the microenvironment. I get a lot of patients who read a lot of books, and then they come to me and I tell them, your labs are horrible. I'm sorry to say that. Could you please stop that, those medicines that you're taking? And they spend a lot of money in order to get a prescription for that drug, and it ends up messing up their terrain and their microenvironment. Like, for instance, the cell is composed, the cell wall is composed of fats, good fats, phospholipids. So you have to eat good fats to maintain that, and your cholesterol should be in a certain level. Having anti-cholesterol drugs in someone and decreasing them below 160 milligram per deciliter, no one can thrive this. You will not have a healthy cell. A healthy cell should have a healthy cell wall so that it can absorb good nutrients and take out waste products. So if you have an unhealthy cell wall, you will not be able to take any good things, and you will retain the bad things inside, and hence cancer and any other disease.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's the same story in all quarters, basically. Is if you a book is a kind of one size fits all medicine. You know, unless it's actually telling you don't do anything from this, go and talk to your practitioner, but this is what can be done. It has to be written very carefully if it's not to be prescriptive, and to give people the idea that the same thing will work for them as works for somebody else, which you're saying, well, of course, it doesn't really. And it may be the right thing for one person in one particular situation, but that doesn't mean it's the right thing for others. So, yeah, very important message. Okay, so fascinating discussion. We've been all over the place. Thank you very much, Wafe.
Always like that with you, Robin.
Do you want to summarize your thoughts on these fundamentals of healing? Just a last word for people who are cancer patients who are listening.
Yes. So I just want to say that cancer is not a death sentence. It's you can actually take control of your body if you believe in the miracle of the human body mentally and spiritually. And since last time we talked about inflammation, please go back to that. And then put in your mind that non-resolution of inflammation can actually lead to cancer. What can we do? Fundamentals. What fundamentals? Avoid inflammatory foods. Take anti-inflammatory food, antioxidants, good cruciferous vegetables, colorful veggies, etc. Low sugar, no sugar at all. a good low Mediterranean diet with fish and extra olive oil, etc. Fasting mimicking diet or intermittent fasting. Optimize your sleep. Exercise is not an option. It's a must if you can. If you have something in your back or that is unable you to make exercise, go to swim at least 3 times per day. Some people will say, I will get chlorine from the water. Just take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C or 100 microgram of glutathione. That will be more than efficient. And okay. Then explore more about what's going on with your body. If you have any infection, optimize your mitochondria, avoid plastics, and then listen to our fellows, integrative oncologists, advice alongside the conventional oncologists. And please, you are the one responsible for your health. You are the driver. We're just giving you the tools to drive through the healing journey for your cancer or recovery.
Great message. Very inspiring, Wafe. Thank you very much. You're the kind of oncologist that everybody would love who's listening to this show, I bet. So, thank you so much. And I look forward to the next time we talk.
Thank you, Robin. It's an honor and always a pleasure to be here with you. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, roll on the day when every oncologist in the UK thinks like Dr. Abdul Hadi, which is, of course, our aim at Yes to Life, to change the thinking behind cancer care to be less about systems, statistics and protocols, and a lot more about people. 2 Yes to Life events happening this autumn. The first, as this show is being broadcast, is a fundraiser for the charity. I am trying to raise $25,000 to support people with cancer, with a slightly bonkers 70th birthday sponsored bike adventure from Land's End to the easternmost tip of Kent, staying off-road as far as possible. It's 525 miles and it's going to take 12 days. So if you can help me reach my target with a donation, small or large, go to yestolife.org.uk, scroll down until you see Robin's senior struggle and just follow the links. And on the 23rd of October, we have an online forum called Bridging the Gap that asks the question, how do we gain the acceptance by oncology professionals of safe integrative interventions? It's going to be a groundbreaking event, and early bird tickets are now available at rock bottom prices, so book right away. Just go again to yestolife.org.uk and click show details on the big banner that's at the top of the homepage. Thanks so much for joining me today. I hope you'll want to join me again next week for more information and inspiration from the world of integrative oncology in the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.